sitting at my table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Respect. Justice.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy. Succession.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Privacy.
Right.
Work.
Peace.
Losers.
Lose.
Men.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raised the wall. Will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
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 Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Progress.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solidarity.
Responsibility.
Fill in the border. I raise the wall. And I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good day to our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a global collection of musicians. I'm Jim Hutchings, and today's co-host is Amnesty International field worker Gord Barnes, and he's joining us to highlight a number of urgent actions that Amnesty's focused on in the world as needing our help now. And we'll also talk about some upcoming events in Saskatchewan. Welcome, Gord.
Thank you, Jim.
And we're going to be talking about Hamid Kassami. We've got a scrapbook here that some people may have seen already, but some people may not know about. And another case somebody who is a prisoner in Iran that shouldn't be there. And we're also going to talk about bananas.
we'll keep everybody kind of in suspense about what the bananas is all about. That'll be a fun part of the introduction of the last portion of the program.
Right. Well, let's start off with Hamid Kassami. What's the story there, Gord?
Well, it's actually, I think, one of hope and solidarity with a person who's actually a dual citizen of Canada and Iran. He lived for a number of years in Toronto with his wife. His name is Hamid Kassami Shaw. And a few years ago now, in 2008, he went back to Iran to visit his mother, who wasn't well at the time, in Iran. And when he was there, he was arrested and charged with espionage, and has been held in jail over the last 4 years, and is facing execution. He's being held in Evin prison in Iran, and it is one of the most difficult places in the world to be in prison. And unfortunately, just about 4 weeks ago now, his family was contacted by the Iranian authorities and told at that time that the execution could take place at any time, that it was, you know, essentially going to happen fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, he is a Canadian citizen,
mm-hmm.
and by virtue of that, you know, the Canadian government should and has taken an interest in his case. Iran does not recognize the dual citizenship, but what has happened is the government of Canada has been encouraged by Amnesty International and his family to speak fairly clearly to Iran and their officials and say they do not want to see Hamid Ghassami executed. And we've been campaigning across the country now and internationally to call on the Iranian authorities to provide justice for Hamid, not to proceed with his execution.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a bit of a tightrope walk, isn't it, Gord? I mean, you want to keep it sort of uppermost in their mind that we are aware of this, of Hamid's plight, and but at the same time, you can't sort of really what am I trying to say here? You can't be too critical of the government because they'll just get their back up.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's right. But at the same time, you know, they have responsibilities under international law. And, you know, that includes providing people with a fair trial. Amnesty International is very, very concerned that large numbers of people in Iran have been executed without any sense of a fair trial. In the year 2011 alone, just last year, Amnesty International is aware of over 360 people being executed in Iran, and many of those people were political prisoners. You know, the method of execution in Iran is hanging. They've often done that to put fear in the hearts of people who don't agree with the government, and that's why we've been campaigning as we have across Canada to support Hamid. And the scrapbook that you mentioned, we've got it here in the studio, and there are pictures of it on our Amnesty Saskatchewan website at amnestysaskatchewan.ca. But you know, what this did is, this scrapbook is really a collection initially of family pictures of Hamid and his wife when he lived in Toronto and at times was on vacation in, say, different parks in Ontario and places like that, doing things that many of us typically would do in terms of enjoying life in Canada. And then it tells the story of when he was arrested, and includes appeals that Amnesty has sent to our Prime Minister in February 2011, saying, please, you know, use Canada's voice to support Hamid. And then it continues to tell the story. And then what happened with the scrapbook is that it has literally been traveling across Canada. It started in Newfoundland, and, you know, there's pictures there with Amnesty International volunteers, activists, at Signal Hill in Newfoundland, and quite a well-known and historic place. And they've got this scrapbook there. And then from there, it went to Halifax, to Quebec City, Montreal, Ottawa, to Toronto. It actually skipped over Manitoba and came to Saskatchewan a couple of weeks ago. And we've been taking pictures with groups of people along the way in all the cities it's been in, and adding them to the scrapbook. We've had the scrapbook in Regina now for, as I said, about 2 weeks, but it's also during that time been to Moose Jaw, and to Saskatoon, and large numbers of postcards have been signed, appeals have been signed, addressed to the Iranian embassy.
Well, I was just wondering, do we have local media involved here? Is the public generally aware that the scrapbook is around?
We were able to, when it was in Regina about a week ago Wednesday, We had a really good interview with one of the TV stations, mm-hmm. and the same thing in Saskatoon. Actually, it was on Global News, mm-hmm. Which was just great, and one of the radio stations as well. So that's important, yeah. So that people become aware beyond there are our local activities that this is something that they can support. Mm-hmm. It's really easy to find the appeals to support Hamid Ghassami Shaul on the Amnesty International website, and you can sign online appeals there. And these, we're hopeful will have an impact on the Iranian authorities. I guess my personal hope is that throughout the time we've had the scrapbook in Saskatchewan, mm-hmm. There hasn't been any, if I can put it this way, horribly bad news. He hasn't, as far as we're aware, the execution hasn't happened. And, my personal dream is that at some point, and I'm sure this is one his family would share, is that he will be provided with justice, that he would be able to return to Canada with his wife. And maybe even one day my dream is that mm-hmm. He'd be able to travel with his family across Canada and meet many of the people who are in the scrapbook, right. who are supporting his case.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. I guess one of the things that just I'm amazed at is how long this process is. He's been in prison for over 4 years, and I don't know how often he has any kind of a judicial proceeding, but it's not transparent by any stretch of the imagination, and it's very difficult, I suppose, to even defend him in Iran. How many lawyers in Iran would want the case?
Well, and unfortunately, there are people who are lawyers in Iran who have been acting on behalf of people like Hamid and others who have then subsequently ended up in prison themselves.
Right.
So it is a difficult environment for people to get justice. You mentioned the length of time he's been imprisoned, and it perhaps is a good way to move on to another case that mm-hmm. we're working on, and we've just received some more appeal postcards. It's actually about a person who's also Iranian. He's not a Canadian-Iranian citizen, but he's Iranian. He's part of the Iranian Azerbaijani minority, and his name is Saeed Mentipur, and actually he is currently serving an 8-year prison sentence, and
wow.
he was actually peacefully campaigning for greater cultural and language rights for his community,
mm-hmm.
and he is a prisoner. Amnesty International has adopted him as a prisoner of conscience and saying to the Iranian authorities that he should be released immediately and without any conditions. He was arrested, as I said, in 2007, and he has committed no crime in terms of being involved in any acts of violence, just peaceful demonstrating with his community. People might be aware that in February there's a day called the International Mother Tongue Day.
Oh, yeah.
So it
mm-hmm.
encourages people to maintain their own language, cultural heritage, and on that day he was detained after having peacefully been involved in a peaceful demonstration. So this is another case in Iran that we're hoping that we can have an impact on, and I'd like to just draw a bit of a connection for the supporters and friends of this radio station, this community radio station, CJTR, because there's a really interesting bit of history here. The person who's the key volunteer coordinator for this campaign for Saeed Mentipur is actually a good friend who's now living in Vancouver. Her name's Valerie Patrick, and she used to live here in Regina. She was active at the time in Amnesty International, and still is in Vancouver. But the connection to the radio station is she's actually one of the founding board members of our community radio station here in Regina, CJTR. Wow. And a really good community person, and obviously if she's supporting community radio. And I thought some of the people who are loyal listeners of community radio here in Regina would like to know that Valerie's still doing some great stuff.
Well, the story here, you know, is really interesting and inspirational, because it is not easy to get a community radio station on the air. There was a lot of work that happened over the course of a number of years, and you know, prior to the station going on the air, and after the station went on the air, we're I guess you could say that we're relatively stable now. We still do fundraising because we depend on money from our listeners, our supporters. But in the beginning, it was quite difficult. And it was people like your friend who made it possible. We still have a few original board members here that continue to work tirelessly. And I think the community owes a great debt of gratitude to them for enabling this wonderful organization that keeps CJTR going.
Yeah, you're right. You know, I was just thinking when I came in today, I should have brought my records to donate and some CDs I've got ready to donate to the garage sale, because that's coming up fairly quickly, isn't it?
It is. It's going to be on June the 9th, and we do still need some need donations of things musical, you know, CDs and vinyl players, speakers, that sort of thing. It's all required and welcome. And if you have a lot, arrangements can be made, and we'll come and pick them up.
Is that right?
That's okay. Right. That's true.
I think I can organize to get over a couple boxes of vinyl to contribute, actually, and probably some CDs as well.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. That would be wonderful. I'm just wondering, this friend that of yours who's involved with the second case in Iran, I'm just wondering how long that has gone on. Is that
well, he was arrested in 2007.
Okay,
so he's been in prison all during that time.
Oh wow!
And is actually
so he's actually been in prison longer than Hamid.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah, and those are very, very difficult environments to be in Iran. And as I say, just simply because we're aware of so many executions having taken place, as example in 2011, we're concerned about, very concerned about the situation with respect to Hamid Ghassami Shall. You know, the circumstances are obviously a little different with regard to the second case for Saeed Mentipur, but the situation for him is quite serious as well.
Does Amnesty have a take on what the Iranian government is, you know, what they're trying to achieve? I know that it's basically a theocracy, that the people that have the power are doing it. I think from their point of view, it's faith-based, you know, as far as Islam is concerned. But then you've got sort of the civil side of the government, and I think they have a different agenda. Maybe it's just power, but does Amnesty have an idea what's actually going on there and causing this kind of occurrence?
Well, unfortunately, the people who are most at risk in Iran would be people who would raise their voice and say there needs to be change.
Yeah.
So people who are active politically and would like to see a more open society in right. Iran. The other thing is that, you know, people who are members of minority or ethnic groups in, right. in Iran that aren't part of the larger,
right.
You know,
so if you're if you're Baha'i in Iran, you got a problem.
Very definitely.
Yeah.
And as I say, this second case that we've been talking about, you know, it's a minority community in Iran who are not well treated, and when they do campaign for, you know, things like their own language and cultural rights, they're subject to intimidation, arrest, and violence. So,
right.
I think that's the best explanation I could give in terms of why these things happen there. Certainly, there's been, you know, people over the last 3 or 4 years in Iran who have really been calling for change, but the authorities there have resisted it.
Yeah, I would think there would be some economic benefits for the country if they, let's say, subscribe to a more moderate view. I think there are sanctions against the country as we speak, sort of thing, and that they would like to have removed, but they don't seem to be that interested in removing them. You know, it's almost a similar situation to North Korea, where they're in big trouble. You know, they can't feed their own people, but they're not willing to change their ways.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically it.
Yeah. But, you know, they, as I say, the hope we have within Amnesty International is that we can still continue to light a candle of hope on cases like this and as I say, see that there is justice for people like Hamid Ghassami Shaul and others.
That's what our Tuesday night letter writing is all about.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we could just mention we do meet on a regular basis at Atlantis Coffee in 7 o'clock in Regina and write appeals. Typically, if I'm there, I'll try to get through 3 appeals in an evening, and other people can join us sort of casually, and people will be welcome to drop in. And
well, what do people have to bring? If they have to bring anything with them?
We've usually got appeals to share from the Amnesty website. If you want to bring some, you know, lined paper and envelopes, we've usually got that there as well. It's a good idea to bring a pen, and you can enjoy a coffee with us. And,
right, yeah. I think, too, there's some people that are perhaps a little intimidated by the prospect of having to write a letter. I'll bet you there are people listening to us right now that haven't written a letter in years. Mm-hmm. And do we have any help for those people, Gordon?
Yeah, we've got a little kind of what we call a cheat sheet or letter writing tips handout that anybody is welcome to use at that evening. And also the cases that we work on each week are really well explained. It's a fairly simple process to put together the letter. There's always some background and then suggested messages that you could include in your letters. And, you know, one of the things I've said before is that the only Amnesty International appeal that will never work is the one, or a letter that will never have any impact, is the one you don't send. Mm-hmm. I really believe that, you know, if we can get the volume of appeals being sent on these very serious cases, we can, in many cases, have a positive impact.
Yeah, the volume is the big thing, I think. You and I had the privilege of meeting Jenny Williams in Montreal a couple of years ago, and that was one of the comments she made about the volume of support mail that sort of inundated the jail.
That's right. Jenny Williams is a leader of WOZA, the Women of Zimbabwe Arise, and she was actually able to attend the Amnesty International Canada annual meeting in Montreal last year, about a year ago now, and we heard her speak, and she has been in jail in Zimbabwe many times, and but she was very clear that it is the appeals that have been sent by people around the world that have made a difference for her.
I get the impression that conditions in a jail are very much sort of at the whim of whoever is actually running that jail, you know? Mm-hmm. If the person in charge has a more humane approach, then things are going to be more humane in that jail, and if he's not inclined that way, then things can get really nasty. So if you're inundating the guy who is running the jail with a bunch of letters, I think that's going to have some impact.
Right. And, you know, we often will send appeals to a variety of officials with respect to different cases.
Mm-hmm.
So in case of Jenny Williams' situation, we might send to the, you know, the consulate in Ottawa for Zimbabwe.
Right.
To the Prime Minister, to judges in Zimbabwe, and even local officials there, depending on the circumstance of each case.
I can see where the advantage is. Here is a person who is trying to represent their country as being progressive and all those other good things, and getting lots of mail from us asking, well, what's going on with Jenny Williams or these other people that are having a great deal of difficulty? And I think that some of that message is going to get back across to their home country.
Right.
Well, we've got to the bottom of the hour, Gord.
Great.
And so it's time for a break, and I have some special music
for
after the break, and I'll keep it a surprise until we get there.
Thanks.
Second time today, everybody scatters and hopes it goes away. How many kids they've murdered, only God can say. Make somebody pay.
of course, that was Canada's own Bruce Cockburn. And I got to say, he's one of my favorites. That's one of my favorite tunes, If I Had a Rocket Launcher.
Mm-hmm. Good music.
Yep, yeah, for sure. And you're talking about arms and things that go bang and stuff like that. Actually, let's shift over. We were talking about bananas. I'm all over the place here. So what do bananas have to do with guns and
Well, we were saying at the beginning of the program that we'd, you know, spend the second half hour talking about a different topic, and I suggested it there was a connection to bananas, and what that is, just for fun, is that people may not be aware that there are actually more controls on the international trade of bananas than there is on the international arms trade. And it's the same thing with respect to bananas. In that respect, have something in common with bottled water and dinosaur bones, because you know, it's a lot harder to trade those things internationally or export them,
right,
than it is AK-47s,
right?
You know, which is, it just doesn't make sense. Right. And for quite a number of years now, Amnesty International and other civil society organizations internationally have been campaigning at the United Nations and encouraging countries to go the direction of having a arms trade treaty. There was actually a decision taken by the countries of the United Nations in 2003 to go that direction. Mm-hmm. You know, not to adopt one that back then, but to go the direction of what would it look like and what would the implications be. And so there have been a lot of discussions taking place about an arms trade treaty internationally. Mm-hmm. And the reason we're raising this now at this point in time is about 2 months from now, mm-hmm. in early July, at the United Nations, that's when all the decisions will be made by the international community about a possible arms trade treaty. And countries are going to have to decide where they stand. And, you know, I think it's worth just stepping back from that topic for a minute and just explain that, you know, these kinds of discussions that take place internationally and the whole effort that Amnesty International members and supporters might make, other organizations, other people in other civil society organizations, do make a difference. I'm absolutely convinced of it. Just a few years ago, Amnesty International and others were involved in a campaign, and we still are, around raising awareness and concern about the terrible situation in many countries of so many women who die as a result of childbirth. You know, women who, it's called maternal mortality. The rates of maternal mortality are very, very high in many countries as compared to, you know, places where there is available health care.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most difficult circumstances when this campaign was launched on maternal mortality and the right to health care for women, was in Sierra Leone. And when the campaign was launched, one in every eight women in that country died from childbirth.
That's unimaginable.
Just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And what we tried to do is raise this as a fundamental human rights issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if people wanted to, they could go to the Globe Mail. Just in the last couple of days has had a major feature article about what's happened in that particular country,
mm-hmm.
as a result of people in the international community saying, we've got to do something. This is a fundamental human rights issue. And there have been a dramatic change. There was a decision by the international community to support free health care for women in that country, and it's brought back the rates of maternal mortality down dramatically in that country. Obviously, there's an issue now about how to sustain that.
Right.
But you know, what a change and a difference, because you know, when women died due to the circumstances of childbirth, it didn't necessarily mean that the child did as well. And
oh, sure.
You know, so there were so many people left orphaned as a result, or perhaps
children survived.
That's right. Yeah. Or maybe they had other children who were born earlier, who were then left motherless. So it's, you know, it's a kind of an example where these international campaigns, and this is a different campaign, the one calling for an arms trade treaty, but it, we believe, must the treaty must have a human rights focus to it, and really that's where Amnesty International is going. It's quite it just staggering to me that every minute one person around the world dies mm-hmm. from armed violence. One yeah. person. That doesn't begin to count the number of people who are seriously wounded as a result of armed violence. And, you know, there every year in the world, there are 12 billion bullets produced, manufactured. Yeah. 12 billion. And that's enough to kill everybody twice, you
yeah,
know, like...
Right.
And there's no currently regulation about how those arms, weapons are moved from one country to the other. So what we got is a situation, for example, in the conflict in Sudan, where, you know, mm-hmm. some countries are moving massive weapons to support, you know, that conflict. And many, many people have been killed as a result. We really believe that the international community needs to get a focus around this and that we can accomplish something. I'm hopeful that our own government can take a lead role in being a positive voice during this discussion and reflect back to a few years ago as well on a different campaign that many people will recall. Canada had a major role. The foreign minister was Lloyd Axworthy at the time, mm-hmm. and he had a major commitment personally to supporting an initiative to ban landmines. You know,
mm-hmm.
And the in 1997, the international community adopted that. There are still some countries who haven't signed on.
United States.
And that's right, and many others. But it's not a long list as mm-hmm. compared to the countries who've supported it.
Yeah.
I was just reading, and you know, have there been, subsequent to the treaty, there have been major efforts in quite a number of countries to clear landmines from mm-hmm. areas where, you know, people were just being blown up on a regular basis.
I've seen some stories on that you can Google, you can look up on the internet, of people who have sort of made it their life's work. They've developed the expertise and they go out and they clear landmines. It's unbelievable, mm-hmm. you know, and with very, oh, let's say crude instruments. Mm-hmm. They're not going out there with high tech. They're actually going out with very simple things and basically knowledge and skill and just an amazing commitment, you know, to go out and do that for, you know, basically for the safety of others.
Yeah. You know what? The way you've just mentioned, you've kind of just read that recently. I was just looking last night that in Jordan, they've gone through a major initiative to clear the country of landmines because there was, you know, thousands of them mm-hmm. and people were being killed as a result even years later because
sure.
they're there for a long time and,
yeah. Yeah.
and dangerous.
Yeah.
They have successfully cleared, you know, the country of landmines now, and what a difference it's going to make for people there.
Mm-hmm.
In contrast, unfortunately, despite the ban on landmines and because some countries are not supporting it. When we got into the conflict last year in Libya, you know, there were many landmines available to the government of the day, and they used them. And it's going to take a while to clear that country of landmines. So, you know, there can be some really positive things that are done by the international community. The arms trade treaty is I think, going to be the focus for Amnesty International probably over the next 2 months, because it's so time sensitive right now. Certainly in Regina, we'll be encourage people to sign appeals, sign petitions. It'll be done around the world, and raising awareness of something that needs to be focused on in a really significant way. I just want to share that, you know, recently there was a woman named Dr. Samantha Nutt who came to Regina actually on two occasions, and some, many people in the community would have heard her. She's actually a family physician in Toronto, but she's also the director of War Child, an organization she founded that tries to stop the use of, first of all, stop and then support people who have been used as war child soldiers. She's an amazing woman. She started as a family doctor, traveled a little bit internationally, and into conflict zones, for example, in the Congo and other countries. And she saw the consequence of the arms trade treaty, or the lack of an arms trade treaty. And, you know, the availability in large numbers of so many dangerous weapons.
Yeah.
And what the impact of those weapons is when you put them in kids' hands. And she became an incredible advocate for an arms trade treaty.
I heard her speaking on CBC, I think a week or so ago, and you're right, she is she's just a wonderful spokesperson for the arms treaty.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm hopeful that if people see Amnesty International at a community event over the next little while, stop by and sign a petition. You can take some for your friends at work or at school, and they're actually available on our website too. I think one of the things is to recall that this is not something that's, when you see a petition like this, that's just available here. We're raising awareness about this issue internationally, and using the other examples I've talked about, these campaigns can have a huge difference in terms of people's lives, and by putting a human rights focus on the arms trade treaty discussions, and making sure that when there are conflicts, states are held responsible for any transfer of arms to another state. For example, you know, there was a situation where a whole ship load of weapons was being shipped from the United States to Egypt during this most recent conflict. And if those weapons had have got there, if the international community hadn't stopped that, they would have then possibly been used, most likely, against peaceful protesters in Egypt. It's this discussion about what's happening with our weapons internationally really needs to be a highlight of our work over the next couple months.
One of the points that I would like to make to our listeners is that when Amnesty decides on an urgent action or something that needs to be addressed, petitions have to be written, letters have to be written, that sort of thing, it's not done lightly. It's done after a great deal of painful research on the ground. We've got investigators that actually, where possible, they actually go to the sites involved and they investigate the situations and what's going on so that they know exactly what the facts are. And it's a decision that's not taken lightly.
And, you know, they, just as one example, quite recently, our senior staff person for the Canadian section of Amnesty International, Alex Neve, was very recently part of a research team that went to southern Sudan, mm-hmm. where the conflict has involved the killings of many, many people. And people have had to flee their communities. You know, that there is a separate country now, South Sudan.
Right.
But there are still some major issues unresolved between South Sudan and, the North Sudan.
I think one of the issues is there's more oil in South Sudan than there is in North.
Right.
Where money's involved, you got a problem.
Yeah. And that conflict, has been ongoing. And so when Alex Neve was there as part of that research mission, it was at a very difficult time because people were literally being driven from their homes. The conflict was probably at one of the worst states it's been for a few years. So, through his reports, he would have documented the extent to which weapons have been shipped in that case from China to Sudan and are being used against people in the south. So, we're calling on everybody who's an international player on this in terms of countries like United States. Obviously, the key countries are the ones who are members of the Security Council for the United Nations, Russia, United States, China, and others. And we believe that the international community, by focusing on these situations, can really make a difference.
And I think the thing that's really important to note here is that it isn't a bunch of rogue nations that are providing these weapons. There's a very small number of nations, and they are part of the so-called developed world, the civilized people. These are the people who are producing these weapons. The permanent five members of the UN Security Council, that's China, Russia, the USA, United Kingdom, and France, plus Germany, control 74% of the world's weapons trade. So we can concentrate on the leadership of those countries and have a huge impact.
That's right. We think that when the world leaders come together later this year, if they do decide to, agree on a legally binding international standards, that those standards need to have that human rights lens mm-hmm. put on them
right.
to make sure it's an effective arms trade treaty. And that's what we're calling for.
Yeah, we need some clear language with simple goals.
Yeah.
They've talk about a golden rule and that they want to see at the core of a trade treaty on arms. And the golden rule is states shall not authorize international transfers of conventional arms where there is a substantial risk the arms will be used to commit or facilitate serious violations of international human rights law or international humanitarian there
right,
you go.
Right.
law. And that's pretty basic. I mean, if they adhere to that, we're there.
Yeah. This discussion hasn't even involved to this extent, to this point at least, any comment on the cost of the arms trade. Aside from the impact on the toll on human lives,
right.
But the world is spending billions of dollars on arms, and if we had those kinds of resources available for other purposes, the world would be a lot safer place and a lot better place.
Yeah, it's amazing. When you start looking at it in those terms, we could feed an awful lot of people and house a lot of people for what is being spent on arms in this world.
Yeah. So, the thing, I guess, in kind of concluding is there's a lot of ways to getting involved in this. You can become more informed yourself by doing a little bit of research. And check out our Amnesty Saskatchewan website. We're also on Facebook at Amnesty International Saskatchewan. On that page, there's information about our upcoming events. And, you can you can sort of inform yourself, and then we're always available as well if you're interested in, and people are interested in the community and maybe in their faith community or schools, having a speaker from Amnesty International, we're available to talk about our current activities, and it's easy to find us in terms of contacting us, and we're glad to do that.
I think one of the things that everyone can do is just with your computer, you know, go on to the Amnesty International sites, Amnesty International Canada, and you could spend hours there looking at all the different problems, human rights problems that we're focused on, and you can pick one, and you can write letters, and you can also sign petitions online as well, which is very simple to do. It's quite an effective way to. I prefer letter writing myself, Gord, because I think that when somebody sees a handwritten letter on their desk, that really means something, because it takes some effort to actually put your thoughts down on a piece of paper, fold it up, put it in an envelope, put the stamp on, address it. That all takes time. Take it over, walk it to the mailbox. So that's a real personal expression. And it's a little too simple, I think, sometimes just to send an email. I mean, you get all kinds of emails. It's easy to ignore emails. But if you've got a pile of letters on your desk,
yeah,
piles of letters are a little harder to ignore.
That's right. Right. And, you know, all those different strategies are important as part of a larger campaign. So what we're doing is connecting with people in a variety of ways, including using the social media that we've talked about. And, you know, wouldn't it be fabulous if in July, when the discussions conclude, that the international community was able to celebrate and say, hey, yeah, we've really come up with something worthwhile here, and it is an effective arms trade treaty that's
yep.
going to stop these kind of atrocities.
Well, Gord, it's been good to talk to you, and time's up, so we're going to close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, and we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. For info on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestyinternational.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."